Mini episode 961 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 961. I am joined by two of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Ken Detweiler and Steve Callis, for a very special occasion. This is our first baseball segment prior to the 2018 MLB season. We had intended to do one for Hot Stove League, but as we will touch upon, wasn't really much of a need to do one because more than ever, there really wasn't much of a Hot Stove League in 2017-2018. But the first segment we're going to do for this season is in honor of our good friend Don Koster, a former broadcast colleague of Ken's and myself. And I know I've said this about the show for those people with the FDH Lounge that don't go as far back as the full catalog at the Sports Talk Network when we were doing programming there, but I've always said there was a couple of shows that were really precursors to the FDH Lounge, and some folks that actually were dignitaries before we even coined the term, as far as folks I did a lot of broadcasting with. Sunday Night Submission is definitely a show that was a precursor to this one, even though I was just kind of an extra on that show from time to time. You've got Reality Check, the first show I ever did at the network from 03 to 05. Ron Glasnap and my other good friend, my old friend from high school, Dave Adams. We did that from 2003 to 2005. That was a lot like the FDH Lounge, except we just focused on sports, of course, because that's the thing that differentiates the lounge, is not just doing sports. And then, of course, Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, where I came in as a sidekick. You, Ken, had started that show, and your brother-in-law, Don Koster, had been the sidekick. But even back then, Don was having a couple of health issues, and there would be some times when it just wouldn't work out for him to be there. So I came in at first as sort of a substitute when he couldn't be there, and then he was gracious enough, I should say, to welcome me in as an additional sidekick, where we did a lot of three-man shows together and had fun. And I know that in talking to you in recent days, you've talked about how much it really meant to him through the course of his life. And again, Don was somebody who was very entertaining to do a show with. I mean, he had this sort of this gruff delivery, no-nonsense delivery that was just out of this world. He always cracked me up. He always had strong knowledge. I mean, he really brought everything that you could ask to that position. And it's one of these things where, and he being, of course, a fellow graduate of the Harvard on the Hocking, Ohio University, and the esteemed Scripps School of Broadcasting therein. But when I was at his wake and I was talking to his wife, it was a little weird because she almost seemed surprised or maybe like just thought I was being nice when I said this about how good Don was. And it's interesting to me that I don't think even she grasped how good he was, just because, again, he didn't really do anything, you know, in broadcasting upon graduating there, you've said to me, until he joined up a couple decades later to do the show. But he's one of these guys that didn't need a lot of training. He was just really good in his role, and he was a natural. And it's a thing where, I mean, I was 100% honest when I said it to her about how good he was and how much fun it was to do shows with him. And again, how much I just really enjoyed being around him. The last time I got a chance to see him after many years apart, of course, you had, I think, a Halloween party over your place, Ken, back in, I say, 2015. Yes. He and I saw each other down at your downstairs bar and just gravitated to each other, and we sat there about 2 or 3 hours, and that's the last I really got to talk to him. I will always treasure that time of getting a chance to catch up to him. And it's sort of an object lesson for me going forward, because I know we talked about this, you and I. Oh, we got to go out. We got to record some stuff with you, Don. And you and I never got around to it. And, of course, we didn't know what his expiration date was going to be, in all fairness to us. But let this be a lesson to everybody that tomorrow was never promised to anybody. I certainly wish we could sit down with him one more time. But the next best thing is to do this show in his honor tonight. And I just, again, I guess I kind of gave a sketch there as to Don and his life. And if you want to throw any technicolor in it, Ken, in any way that you think is good, go right ahead.
Well, I think I know why Mame, his wife, was a little taken aback by your comment.
Okay.
As you know, Don was never one to mince words, ever.
Right.
And so,
but it made him great.
40-some years.
That's what made him great.
I know. And he would take on a side of a conversation just like that, without any research or anything like that. And just to be what my grandmother used to call it, is just a boobler or a little shit. He would just do it just to get things stirred up. And he would do it with some ferocity at times. But he was a character. And we're fortunate enough to have just a number of characters in all of our lives. And when they go, it's just, there's a void there. So thanks to you, Rick, and having Steve on board with us again tonight, which is just, I'm getting a little choked up here, but it's a real honor to have both of you guys, both people I count friends.
Thank you. Thank you, Ken. And again, a couple of years ago, you actually got to do a segment sitting down with Steve in person here. Steve, of course, being a denizen of the Big Apple, but back when his son was living in town here and living in Cleveland Heights, I believe, at the time, you and I got a chance to drive over there and record with him in person. But I knew when I put you guys together talking baseball personally, you guys are more or less at about the same points in your life, have a great passion for baseball, have both coached baseball an awful lot, really know the game inside and out. And I knew it would be a great pairing, and it's been great when you guys have been paired up previously. But again, Steve, I'm going to tell you what I told you off the air, and that is that, again, you go to do a show like this, you don't want it to be the Phantom Limb Syndrome here. It would be kind of a downer for Ken and I to do this show ourselves with it being in Don's memory. The way to give tribute to Don, because we were a great three-man booth, is to do another great three-man booth. And there's nobody that's more natural to bring into this thing for these purposes than you. And like Ken, I greatly appreciate you being here to do this with us.
I greatly appreciate you guys having me, just listening to these stories about Don and the others you've told me off the air. It's just an honor to be here. And I don't know that I can fill his shoes, but I'll certainly do my best to give us some information on the upcoming baseball season.
I know this. Don would have enjoyed doing segments with you. I mean, Ken, you can back me up on that.
Yes. Yes, because you know what you're talking about. You have a passion for the game, just like Rick and I, and he did too. And boy, I was watching a little baseball. I'm working out of the house here today and watching a little MLB baseball, and I'm like, even though spring training, it's like, I got the itch, gentlemen.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. I think we all do. And that's the thing where, I mean, I can just kind of see it. If we'd known Steve back in the day, if he'd been on to do a segment with us, when we went to commercial, it would have been something like, Don would have like turned to us and said something like, I like this guy. He's pretty good. So there's no.
And he would have said it in such a manner, a little more colorful and definitely loud.
Yes. Yes. Yes, he would have. And, you know, again, it's, you know, if you knew a Don Koster, the only way to go about something like this is with a smile on your face. And I've definitely been smiling and laughing a decent amount since we started, as I know will continue to be the case as we get into the subject matter. So, Steve, we've more or less had you on cold storage a little bit here as we set this thing up. So I will start with you as far as looking at the off season and some of the big stories here. And again, the defining element of the offseason by far is, again, why we didn't do a show for Hot Stove League, because more than almost any other year you could name, I mean, if you go back to the collusion of the mid-'80s, mid to late 80s, maybe you could look at some of those years. I haven't seen it stack up exactly as far as unsigned players then versus now, but the slowness at which these deals are coming around, and again, really seeming to be a buyer's market at this point. J.D. Martinez ends up where everybody thought he would all along with the Red Sox, but certainly not with the kind of deal that anybody thought it would be, and it kind of goes from there. Eric Hosmer going to the Padres. I mean, if the Padres are suddenly able to afford a guy like that on the free agency market, it kind of tells you a little bit about the overall values and where they're at right now. So there's a lot of reasons for this. Obviously, looking at the constricting effect of the luxury tax, which a lot of people like me have despaired of ever being any kind of a restraint on spending. It looks like it kind of finally is. The Dodgers and the Yankees, the big boys, would like to get underneath a certain limit here so that they're not paying as much in taxes going forward. But what are your thoughts, Steve, because I know you got a bunch of them, on this offseason and why it was as slow and as pokey as it was?
Yeah, I just don't know that I buy into the, we all understand that analytics is virtually, I won't say totally, but virtually taking over the game. But I certainly don't buy into the notion that every team has their similarly situated now analytical group that just comes to the conclusion that Mike Moustakas isn't good enough to sign to a big contract, just using one blatant example for me, just because under analytics he's not that good. But if you watch the Royals play, and I actually did watch them a number of times this year, and watched him specifically, and of course going back to the years before the World Series and everything, this guy to me was a giant player. I don't know if it's an anti-Scott Boras thing. Maybe you know, things are coming home to roost on Scott Boras, because a lot of these guys are his clients. But I can't say there's collusion either. Back when there was collusion, I think there was a lot of evidence that was eventually found, emails, et cetera, that nobody would be dumb enough to make today. You won't get the evidence today that you got back then. But it does sound like almost all at once everybody decided just to draw the line. And I don't think we've really ever seen that before. You've always, you know, it just takes two fools to make a billionaire. And even in the past, sometimes with the Yankees, it took one fool, the Yankees, being against themselves. So I don't quite get what's happened. I just don't buy that we, all the teams came to the same conclusion because we're all doing the same analytics. I think there's something more than that. Is it outright collusion, and is it provable? That I don't know either, because it's probably somewhere in between. But you can't help but think a lot of owners, individually or even in little meetings, are going, we finally got this Scott Boras after all these years, because as you guys know, for decades now, he's been saying, I don't care what your team offers you, you're going to test free agency. And then invariably that led to bidding wars that made his clients a lot richer, a few of whom should not have been a lot richer.
Right.
But that was the game then, and this is the game now. And I'm not saying these guys are coming down the short end. I never, you know, how can you get upset when these guys only sign for, I don't know, $120 or $130 million instead of $150 million? I mean, come on, it's ridiculous. It's like Monopoly money at some point. But I think there is something going on here, and I think it's more than just we all use analytics now when this guy's not that good.
Well, that's an interesting thing, and Ken, I would say, turning to you to sort of build upon Steve's points there, collusion is illegal, but groupthink is not, and I think that might be the loophole that the MLB owners have found.
Exactly, yeah, I agree with Steve. I had never thought of the Scott Boras angle, but he burned some bridges. You know, and now it's time to maybe pay the piper. The thing I get is, sooner or later, don't these, you know, the NFL, you know, MLB and so forth, and NBA and stuff, sooner or later, I mean, doesn't everything keeps going up and up and up? Doesn't it have to come down at some point? And maybe they're taking a realization that, hey, we can pocket that money, we being the owners, and maybe the fans will see as their prices are passed on to, like, what, $8 a hot dog and things like that. Maybe we've got to that point. The other thing that is a head-scratcher, too, Rick and Steve, is, for me anyway, we're seeing, like, Moustakas, we're seeing big names during training camp still out there. And I'm not thinking about the old days when the free agents that were still hanging around, even this late, would have been like Felix Fermin and guys like that. I mean, these are some big names.
That's right. That's absolutely right in terms of how it's gone. And, yeah, it's been a weird market. It's been a sort of not exactly an overnight unsettling of the market, because some of these things, as you indicated, Steve, the trend lines have kind of been here a little bit as far as analytics and how things are getting priced in there. But to a certain extent, it is a little bit of the thing of the kid that sticks his hand on the hot stove and, you know, burns it. Some of these contracts, I think teams are having buyer's remorse as far as some of the things that they've done with that. As far as it goes with Scott Boras, that is a very useful angle to consider as well. But to use, once again, the analogy of our good friend Don Koster, who one of the things I greatly owe him for was we used to do back in the day at the Sports Talk Network, he came up with the idea for it, the Carol Morris Scholarship Fund at Bowling Green State University Up All Night fundraisers, where we would do the marathon shows overnight. By the way, the fund is now fully endowed and giving away the first scholarship this year. And that was the first real movement we had since the funeral. So I owe Don a lot. To use that analogy, I don't think anybody's going to be throwing any telethons for Scott Boras and his clients anytime soon. Not nearly as worthy a cause as the Carol Morris Scholarship Fund, I assure you. So,
well, you walked us right through the door on that one.
Yeah, I think so. And it's, you know, to whatever extent, it's sort of hand-in-hand with another one of the big stories of the offseason. And I'll start with you again on this one, Steve, as far as, if you look at a poster child franchise for this postseason, it almost has to be the Marlins and the way that they stripped down. A lot of people would say inexplicably when Derek Jeter got there, because this was a pretty good team that if you put the pedal to the metal a little bit, got a little bit of pitching, it would clearly have been in the wild card race this year. Clearly. I don't think there's any arguing that a little bit of an upgrade puts you in that race and gets you a spot. Maybe not a great chance to win the division with Washington being there, but if Washington's down a little bit, who knows? Maybe you got a chance to steal it. Instead, they go the other way. A little bit of a wink-wink, nudge-nudge there as Derek Jeter happens to send Stanton up to his old team, the Yankees. A little bit of a suspicious deal, I would say, as far as the buyer's market on that one. A little bit of me being bitter, I admit. But when you look at that, Steve, in an off season where we were looking at teams making a lot of inexplicable moves, and I've seen in recent days people really kind of scratching their heads a lot about Tampa Bay, their cross-state rivals, if you want to call them that. They've been making some inexplicable moves. Teams that are not at the upper echelon in baseball have been doing a lot of weird and certainly in the short term counterproductive things, none more so than the Miami Marlins.
Well, I'm looking at it as the new, in all sports, not just baseball, as the new race to the bottom. I mean, when you look at a team like the Astros, who were horrifically bad for 3-4 years, 100-loss seasons, yet they stockpiled their draft picks. They got some incredible young talent. I thought last year, intelligently, they brought in a couple of veterans with championship pedigree, like a Beltran and a McCann, and I think that's what really helped put them over the top, not because those guys were great players, but because they were in the clubhouse, and oh, here we are in the playoffs, and here we are in Game 7, blah, blah, blah. I think that really helped them. I think you saw it, you see it in other sports. Look at the 76ers, trust the process. Could they have been worse than they were the last 3 or 4 years, and now they have all these draft picks? It's funny that Tampa Bay is doing this to me, Rick, because they were the originators. They got to a World Series by being the worst team in baseball. I think they had six number one in the draft picks 6 years in a row and got guys like Longoria and other guys who were top-notch players. So I think this is the new race to the bottom. I'm shocked that Jeter did what he did because he's going to take a pounding. He already is. And I think he's a lot closer to becoming the Michael Jordan of the Major League Baseball management team, because Jordan just kind of went into it and really has gotten nowhere. And here we are, what, 5, 6, 7 years later, and Charlotte is at best a, what, mediocre team, slightly more than mediocre. So I know the Marlins disbanded two world championship teams, but again, that was after they won the world championship. And that certainly is not happening, did not happen here, and I think you were right. I thought they were on the precipice. They certainly had the best young outfield in baseball. And Stanton was a freak, and they traded D. Gordon as well. But I think the new theory might very well be, don't be mediocre, don't be bad, be horrifically bad. Otherwise, you're just going to try and be, you know, I'll use a football analogy. Look at the Jets this year, 0-16. Their over-under was like 4, and they were dumb enough to win 5 games. So where are they going to be? If they were as bad, no, I'm not even trying to be funny. If they were as bad as they were supposed to be, they're still looking for a quarterback, and they're going to give Kirk Cousins $30 million. And I don't want to go to football, but my point is, in all of these sports now, if you're not near the top, you don't want to be in the middle. You don't want to be average, slightly better than average, slightly under average. You want to be really, really good, or you want to be horrifically bad. And I think you're seeing it again in the NBA. There's like six teams with 18 wins now. So who's going to get the first draft pick? So they can do what they want to try and have anti-tanking rules. But the reality is, at the end of the day, the tankers who tanked, and I would put the Astros there, I would put the 76ers there, I would put Tampa Bay of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago there. I think people are seeing that and essentially saying, grin and bear it, we're going to be bad, but in the end, maybe we can be the next Houston Astros.
Well, all I can say as far as it goes to the NBA as a big Cavs fan is lose, Brooklyn, lose. And they're certainly doing that. They're doing their part.
I was going to add the Browns to that, too. Keep looking at something right.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Ken, I keep hearing about, five picks in the first two rounds, $100 million in free agency. I would hope you would have something to show for 2 years of not giving a crap and going 1-31. That's like the bare minimum you should have when you defer two entire seasons.
Oh, and I'll tell you what, Steve, I'm coming over to the Jets side with you. If these knuckleheads here at the Browns headquarters start trading these picks down again for multiple picks, good Lord.
Well, the front office seems to be good now. We still got a bozo for a coach, but the front office is getting better and better with all the talent they're adding. But what I want to ask you about, Ken, again, to kind of build on the point that Steve was making there, and it's kind of grim to be talking baseball and to have to be making analogies like this one, to be talking economics, much less grim economics the way that I am. I'm going to use the term recession. And economists will tell you that obviously you're better off having, in the long run, sort of the steep V downturn, like steep downturn and then steep back up. And it seems to me that's what you want to do if you're one of these teams here, because again, it goes even deeper than the Astros. It was the Cubs before them and the Royals before them. This is three teams in the last couple of years alone that have done the formula of being bad, really sucking for a long time and then getting to be at that point. All of them had prolonged downturns, the U-shaped recessions, if you will, that the economists talk about, and to where people were kind of giving up on them in every instance, like when is this finally going to happen? And it did happen, but for all of the teams right now, I think if you're looking at where you're at and you don't have a really good farm system and you don't have that good of a talent on your team, it sort of does make sense to try and do that downturn for a year or two, but you want it to be a steep downturn and then I think a steep turnaround, you know, once you clear out your cap space, once you start getting some high picks in there. It seems like that's the way to really do it if you're not one of the teams that's already part of the hoi polloi.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to talk about steep downturns without getting out of baseball again here, going back to the Browns. But I guess I'm curious about all these. I'm going back to analytics, and I don't mean to give you guys a curve again, but I'm curious to see what this is going to look like a couple years down the road. But some of these teams really, they all invest in analytics, but some of them are just going overboard with this stuff and see what kind of returns come from these analytics. If there's a downturn coming for those teams down the road, if I'm making sense at all. Like the Yankees, from what my understanding is that they're super into the analytics part. And pretty much to the point that you can get rid of their old manager, who I thought was a gem of a manager, and hand it over to a guy who has no experience.
Well, I can certainly speak to that. And I think you're right, Ken, but I think the problem is the wave, if you will. Look at Mickey Callaway with the Mets. The wave of the analytics guys is they all want Art Howe to be the manager. They don't want the fiery manager. Billy Martin couldn't get a job today. They don't want the, I think, intelligent, self-thinking Joe Girardi kind of guy who, as you know, had his trouble with the Cubs. You know, did really was a good manager. Did I say the Cubs or I meant the Marlins? He wasn't the manager of the year and he got fired.
Right.
The new wave of manager and all these GMs who have been in the background for decades, I think, want to be out front. I think Sandy Alderson of the Mets wants to be out front. I think Brian Cashman wants to be out front. And this is the new wave to me. And that is, we just kind of want a manager that he can implement what we want. And I even heard, I know a guy who's really good friends with Bobby Valentine, who's now the athletic director up at Sacred Heart. My buddy's a coach up there. And he said Bobby Valentine said he thinks it's a like a money purge, that they don't want to pay managers $6, $7, $8 million a year. They want to pay managers $1 million or $2 million, and they think they can save money. Now, I have no idea if that's true, but clearly from a personality perspective, I don't think Bobby V could get a job nowadays. They want the guy, the Art Howe, do what we tell you, don't make waves. I thought, frankly, that's how Terry Collins lasted the years he lasted. Remember, he was supposed to be just kind of a placeholder till the Mets got good, but the Mets got good and they kept him, and now the whole pitching staff fell apart. I don't know, they bring in a pitching coach from Cleveland. I don't know that he's going to be able to fix these guys' arms or not, but my point is, all of these guys, when you look at them, to me, I'll put players, managers in quotes, that they're players, managers, but they really are not the aggressive kind of go. Sparky Anderson today? I don't think so. So, not because I don't think they should be, I think they absolutely should be, but I think they've tried to trivialize, might be too strong a word, but certainly lessen the impact of the managers on the actual game the way it's played, which of course I find disgusting.
And you couple that, guys, with the analytics, and now you're saving on scouts. So there's more money. You put the two together, and you're putting all that money into the owner's pocket. Why wouldn't I think otherwise? I mean, it makes total sense. And then you keep these free agents out there. They're saving money there. These guys are really possibly just pocketing tons and tons of money now. So
they are
smart business move, I guess.
Very much so. Very much so. And to follow up a little bit on a nugget that Steve had there mentioning Bobby Valentine, in a true sign that we are in the Trump era, that's U.S. Ambassador to Japan, Bobby Valentine to you. So,
well, now I'm going to take that line and try to go a different direction on you here, guys, but still, I'm sitting here thinking, what happens, and I'm an old school guy, baseball guy, you both know that, but it used to be, you used to earn these jobs, going up through the minors, taking a rookie ball team, and riding the buses, and maybe I'm just going nostalgic here, but I feel bad for those guys, I really do.
It is interesting that's not the case. We've kind of gotten away from that a little bit, and that's one of the things that's really kind of an ongoing reshaping of the landscape in MLB. As we're looking at the leagues, and again, we're going to go, I think, more big picture on that, because there really wasn't a whole lot that changed the structure at the top of either league in the offseason. The middle part and the bottom part, maybe in both leagues, but with little offseason movement, there's been little room for anybody. Obviously, a team like San Francisco making moves to try to get back to where they were by bringing in Evan Longoria and doing some stuff like that. But structurally, not a whole lot changing at the top of either league. We'll start with the AL. The Yankees continuing to be aggressive here now with the Twin Tower sluggers that they have, with Stanton coming in there and continuing to build on what they had. Boston bringing in J.D. Martinez, as I alluded to earlier, inexplicably so low in home runs last year. I remember I did a show with somebody, and they were like, but they don't have Big Daddy Ortiz anymore, or Big Poppy Ortiz anymore. I'm like, there's a lot of guys underachieving here still. You know, it was a down year for some of the guys that they had. You add J.D. Martinez to it, they should be a little bit stronger in that regard. So they're still going to be in the mix. They certainly project as playoff teams. Our Indians can. I'm not happy with the offseason at all. To have, permanently crippled Michael Brantley, which I hate to be a pessimist, but here we go. Keep him instead of Jay Bruce, who signed with the Mets for about the same amount of money. Thanks a lot, guys. Yonder Alonso, who looks like a one-year wonder as far as the home run surge. I didn't have a problem letting Santana get away because I was never a huge Santana guy. But, again, the Indians look to have faded back. But, again, the rest of the division flat out sucks right now. Everybody else is doing the downturn right now. and trying to get good for later on. In the West, you've got the Angels maybe trying to take some steps forward here. You bring in Ohtani and add to what they had. They still have a horrible farm system, so it's really kind of a stars and scrubs thing, not just on their roster, but throughout their organization. Houston, the rich get richer, not in terms of market size, but talent. They add some nice pieces in the offseason to what they had. So take it away, Steve, as far as your big picture impressions, AL. It just seems like a lot of the same teams, I think, we'll be talking about in October as we were last October.
I totally agree with that. The one team that I have coming in, but you've already referenced them, is kind of the Angels. I'm buying into the Ohtani thing. I'm fascinated to watch him play/pitch. I think it'll give Mike Trout a boost if he's actually playing for something, as great as he is. I think he'll be even greater if he's playing for what I think is going to be a wild card spot, because I think you're right. I don't think they can touch the Astros. I'm a little down on the Indians only because they've lost two-game leads in the last 2 years, and I let them slide on the first year, but to lose three in a row to the Yankees. Now, if you buy into the after the fact, and I think you said at the time, Rick, you had kind of heard rumors that Kluber was actually hurt because the Yankees can't touch Kluber when he's Kluber. Yet they were able to in that series last year, so maybe I'm being too tough on the Indians. But I think it's the Astros to lose. I think they're the best team. I think they're only going to be better with the experience they now have in their back pockets from winning it all last year. I do like the Red Sox, but I don't give the Red Sox a deep future because I think they're relying, even though I don't like the Dodgers either, because Kershaw in the postseason is not Kershaw. There's two Kershaws. I don't know if he's Peyton Manning, but I've heard people compare Kershaw to Koufax, which is blasphemy in some areas. But I will say, for better or worse, having seen Koufax in the early 60s when I was a little kid with my old man every year shutting out the Mets, you know, people forget in 62, 3, 4, 5, nobody went to see the Mets. Everybody, all these National League guys in New York were like, oh, the National League's back. Let's go see Mays. Let's go see Koufax. Let's go see Clemente. Nobody went to see the Mets. That's a myth, the lovable Mets. But you can't mention Kershaw with Koufax unless you put comma in the regular season. So I'm sick of people telling me on the one hand how great he is, and others saying, oh, he can't sniff Koufax. Well, Koufax in the postseason had like a 0.90 ERA. He played for the modern day hitless wonders, the Dodgers in the 60s. And not to go off on a tangent, but I'll give you one of the greatest stories I ever heard. Don Drysdale, there's a biography of Drysdale, I think, and Drysdale was a lunatic, and of course he was the number two, the Koufax's number one. They held out together, blah, blah, blah. Nasty pitcher, great pitcher, 6'7", blah, blah, blah. But he was in the hospital, and one day somebody came in and said, Sandy threw another no-hitter. And supposedly Drysdale looked at the guy and said, did we win? So that gives you some kind of sense of how great Koufax was. So yeah. I compare Kershaw to Koufax in the regular season. If you look at their numbers, the numbers that Kershaw has put up are incredible, but there is no comparison in the postseason. So I kind of eliminate the Red Sox because Chris Sale, forget the playoffs, he's been his whole career terrible in September. I think he just runs out of gas. He has that vicious motion. He throws as hard as he can. I don't think he paces himself. So I throw the Red Sox out of more than making the playoffs. And, of course, when you throw in the David Price fiasco in the postseason, I don't think he's still started a game and won one yet. He's like 0-7 or 8. They can't go all the way. So, too, in the National League, I know we'll get to them. I feel the same way about the Dodgers, although they almost got all the way last year. So I have the Astros coming out. I do have the Yankees winning the division and making the playoffs. I don't think they're as deep as pitcher as people think they are. Obviously, they're going to have, you know, everybody's already making the comparisons to Mantle and Maris. Again, I'm an old-time guy. I'll believe it when I see it. Mantle and Maris were massively strong guys, but when you look at them, they were not 6'7", 250. That's what we have with these two guys. They're monsters. They hit mistakes 500 feet. but they can even just get part of the ball and hit home runs. It's unbelievable how these two guys are. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens with them. So I like the Yankees, Indians, and Astros in the division. I like the Red Sox and Angels to be the wild cards. But I do like the Astros to come back. Going to have an upset for you in the National League. You guys will probably give me some grief for it, but I got to pick something different. So I'm going Astros to come out of the American League this year.
Well, and I'll tell you what, the one thing about how it goes with Kershaw, the one thing that he's got over Koufax, undeniably, maybe it's because Kershaw never pitched in Brooklyn, but he didn't start with a couple of mediocre years the way Koufax did.
That's true.
He wasn't as great as he is now overnight, but he was a lot closer to being prime Kershaw coming out of the gate than Koufax ever was his first couple of years. So that's
well, if I could just say one thing about that, you're 100% right, but let me defend Koufax, who I think is the greatest pitcher who ever lives, period. That's where, to me, Koufax is the Beatles, and any other pitcher is any other rock group you want to come up with. But Koufax, when he was drafted, he was one of those guys that if you didn't keep him on your roster and sent him down to the minor leagues, he could then be taken by another team. That's how Clemente, who, by the way, was Giant property and could have played in the outfield with Willie Mays, Clemente, once they put him in the minor leagues, and that's how they tried to hide him, but that's how the Pirates got him. So Koufax didn't have a choice, and that's why when you look at him, he was on the 59 Dodgers, the Go-Go Giants, that beat the Go-Go White Sox in 59, and like nobody knows that. But that was because of the rules at the time. They could not send Koufax to the minor leagues. But I think if you gave him a $10,000 bonus or more, if you can believe that, if they gave him a $10,000 bonus or more and he was sent to the minors, somebody else could draft him at the end of that season. So that's why Koufax, and again, you're totally right. Kershaw was Kershaw pretty much from the get-go and took Koufax literally 4 or 5 years. It wasn't a 1 or 2 year deal. But I think that's the reason why, and I always think what would have happened if Koufax could have gone to the minors for a few years, like virtually everybody else did, because, you know, a $10,000 bonus was so much money back then.
Right.
And now people hear this and they laugh at the story, but that's the story, and that's why Koufax was a major league pitcher when he was like 20 years old.
Well, what a great counterpoint to what I said, because, yeah, that is definitely worth considering. No question about it. Ken, again, the American League, do you look at it as Steve and I do at the top where it looks like a big old ball of same old, same old?
Yeah, well, yes. I've got in the AL East, my pick. Well, again, it's going along with what you guys were saying earlier. I believe Steve said it was a race for the bottom. I'm looking at the AL East. Goodbye, Jays, Orioles, and Rays. We've already started this dance.
All right.
They're going down. In the Central, I say goodbye. Well, I think the Twins might be so excited this year that they're going to play about 500 balls. Some of the people are prognosticating. Mm-hmm. And so long, Tigers, sayonara, the Royals, adios, White Sox, tank, Sydney. They're getting younger, just like, you know, we talked about. In the West, I see the Mariners. They've always hovered around just average. The Rangers are not investing at all in pitching. And that's in that heat down there, half your games, they're even going to be worse than just average with their pitching, I think. The Athletics are the Athletics, and they keep turning over topsoil like we used to do on the farm. they do it with players, just over and over. There's no logic or rhyme or reason they make some of these deals, and they have been that way for years. So I'm eliminating them, which comes down in 1,000 words or less. I'm sorry. But I see the Red Sox winning the East, and the main reason for me, gentlemen, is because, again, I think Cashman is putting way, way too much into analytics and an untested manager. Even though Boone knows what he's doing, he's not been in this situation. And there's going to be pressure on these guys, first losing streak they have. And we'll see how that shakes out, whether they weather that storm. So I'm going with the Red Sox in the East, the Indians by default. It's just like you guys, I'm very, very down on what they did. They did nothing, really. Roger Davis, really?
Yeah.
And then in the West, I've got the Astros. Those guys really have put together that team the correct way. I was so impressed with their playoff run.
Yep.
Deservedly so to be the champs. And then I'd see the Angels if their arms get healthy, because they've done a lot to add to their lineup, but they're a suspect as far as that starting rotation. So I've got the Red Sox, Indians, and Astros, Angels, and Yankees as the wild card teams.
Well, and I'll tell you what, Ken, for us Indians fans looking at the American League Central, the two sweetest words of all are by default. It's just a good thing we're in that division.
and may I just interject what Steve said? I used to sit with my father, and we were in awe of, even though we were in Cleveland, we were in awe of Drysdale and Koufax. And then we can't forget Maury Wills. That's where I got my love for the small ball game. Get him on, get him over, get him in, and let the pitching take over. So that was the Dodgers back then.
A very exciting player, to be sure, no question about it. I've actually got the Yankees coming out of the American League. I've got them beating the Astros. I've got them again in the American League Championship Series. Spoiler alert, fear not, I don't have the Yankees winning the World Series. I'll get to that a little bit here. But in turning to the National League, again, seems to be the same kind of story structurally. You've got somebody like San Francisco trying to elbow their way back into the conversation. You've got their counterpart from earlier in the decade. It was a one-sided rivalry, but it was an interesting one, them and the Cardinals. Neither of them has been particularly relevant that much in recent years, especially the Cardinals. But they seem to be doing some interesting things there as well, and them taking part in the Marlins fire sale with Ozuna certainly is going to help them out a lot. But again, I don't see a whole lot changing as far as the teams that we're talking about come October. Curious to think what you've got to say when you look at it, Steve.
Well, I think my surprise is not going to be that the Nationals are going to win the East, because that's almost by default, unless you buy into, again, somehow that Callaway can revamp all of these Met pitchers. The Mets had one starter, pitch more than 120 innings. So the notion that they're now going to have five starters, and I wrote an article, must be two, maybe even 3 years ago, that the Mets should go to a six-man rotation before they wreck all the arms on this team. Flash forward 2 years, they've just about wrecked all the arms on this team. I didn't write, unfortunately, and should have, but certainly said it on the air in a podcast, either with Joe Stazak or someone even earlier than that, maybe on the STN.net years ago, that they should trade Matt Harvey when he was Matt Harvey, because once he started saying, I want to be the next Derek Jeter, and the only thing that they had in common is that they both went out with beautiful women, I knew this guy was going to have a problem. Throw in when he insisted on going out for the ninth inning of that World Series game and Terry Collins buried himself by letting him go out there. And I remember looking at the stats then, and he had come out for the ninth inning in 65 career starts up to that day. He had come into the ninth inning one time. So the notion that he was going to come out in a big game and do something was, to me, absurd. But their pitching staff has gone really in the crapper, for lack of a better term, and I don't see how they're going to... DeGrom, fantastic. Syndergaard, let's say he's, you know, off that weightlifting program that gave him 15 extra pounds of muscle, which, since we're all old-timers, would say, no, don't lift weights. You're a pitcher. Don't. But he did. He came in ripped, and what happened? So, and then you're talking about other guys like a Harvey and a Mats and a Wheeler and all of these guys who look like really, really good major league pitchers are all coming back from 1 or 2 year injuries. So I just don't see them. So I think it might be a by default for Washington. And I like that you liked, Rick, those two words, by default. The other two words I would say for Cleveland and for the Mets and for virtually every team is stay healthy.
Right.
Yeah. That's in the new world of analytics, isn't that funny, Ken? In the new world of analytics, how do they account for guys who can't play, pitchers who can't pitch more than 120 or 30 innings in a year? If everyone's bigger, faster, stronger, and the nutrition's better and the workout's better and we can go see our guy and we got 12 doctors, then how did these guys, how did Koufax throw 363 innings or whatever he threw? And you're looking, he throws more than two or three pitchers used to. Now, I understand he retired early with a bad arm, but they had no Tommy John back then. They couldn't do anything for these guys back then. Yet you go look at the numbers, complete games, That's like a joke. You have pitchers in the 60s who threw more complete games than whole pitching staffs today. So I still don't quite get that. So I don't think the Mets are going to make that comeback. The Marlins are going to be the worst team in baseball. The Phillies are young. You know, they're going to get better, and Atlanta's just going to be okay. It's not as bad as the AL Central, but I think the Nationals win by default. I got the Cubs winning, but I got the Brewers coming out. I don't think the Cardinals have quite done enough. But the Brewers, I think, by getting Lorenzo Cain and Yelich from the Miami Fire sale, I think they might have done enough to put them higher up on the totem pole. And then in the West, I don't think, you know, you like what the Giants did. They got Longoria. They got McCutcheon, too, I think.
Yes.
And Longoria is not Longoria. I mean, I watch him all the time. Unfortunately, just like I had to watch those Patriots, I had to watch those Tampa Bay Rays because my son was a Tino Martinez fan. And when he put the curse on the Yankees and said the Yankees will never win with Jason Giambi because they didn't re-sign Tino, and he was right. But I'm still looking at Tampa Bay games, you know, what is that, 12 years after that happened? So Longoria, who's been kind of lost in Tampa, you know, they had that one run that one year, but he's not what he used to be. And McCutcheon, who was an MVP candidate for 3 or 4 years in a row, he's still real good, but he's not an MVP candidate, so I don't think that's enough for them. That's why I have the Brewers coming as a wild card. In the West, again, I don't think the Giants have done enough. A lot of people think it's going to be the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies all making the playoffs. I got the Dodgers winning that division. Again, I don't buy into them on the big picture because Kershaw is still not Kershaw in the postseason. But I do have the D-backs coming out of the West. So not only am I picking the Nationals to win the whole thing in the National League, since I'm going to shoot myself in the head at the end of the year because I picked them 2 years ago and was still shaking my head after 2 years ago, I'm going to pick the Nationals to beat the Astros just because I don't want to pick the obvious.
Okay, that's very interesting. And I'll tell you, too, the thing about Longoria, I do agree completely, and maybe it's not as dramatic as this, but Peyton Manning, when he was in the Super Bowl the second time, essentially functioning as Trent Dilfer with that defense, like, if there was truth in advertising, we would make players change their names at that stage. Like, Evan Longoria should have to, he should be known as David Freeze from now on, you know what I mean? Like, we should have truth in advertising labeling here. Because, you know, you hear, they went out and got such and such. Yeah, they didn't get such and such circa 2012. Sorry about that. But, you know, as far as it goes, I've actually got Cubs over Dodgers in the National League Championship Series, and I'm saying Cubs over Yankees in the World Series, which the good folks at Fox would be having to smoke a cigarette after that one, I'm afraid, after the ratings came in. So if that comes to pass, albeit they would be this close to Dodgers-Yankees just like they were last year, only it would be the other of the two teams getting in there. So, Ken, when you look at the National League, when you look at a lot of the usual suspects in there and some of these other teams like Milwaukee and San Fran trying to bubble up, what do you see?
Okay, I'm going to give it right down the line here. I've got the Nationals in the East. Again, a lot of these guys, these teams are mailing it in again. I do have a couple of teams to watch because it is, like Steve said, a pretty pathetic division. I think the Mets, I really like their new manager. I like Callaway a lot, and I'm hoping that he's going to have great success there.
Yeah, we're going to miss him.
And also, yeah, I really think so, too, yes. The other thing is, I like what the Braves are building down there in Atlanta.
Yes.
Just a team to watch. I'm not saying any of these teams are going to win anything. But, boy, it's just kind of fun to watch the whole pot bubble up and start to really turn into something. In the Central, I've got the Cubs winning. Talk about a front runner again. And Brewers, I like what they've done with their everyday lineup again. I keep having an emphasis here on these teams don't have the pitching to go against the really good teams like the Dodgers with Kershaw and so forth. The Pirates, I'm befuddled by these guys. Don't quite understand. They get rid of their best players, and then I see their general manager come on TV, and he says, "We expect to compete for the World Series."
Yeah, good
luck. I'm like, what are you on? You know, it's like, so that's a head scratcher. I'm curious to watch how that plays out. And then the Cincinnati Reds, the team that you can't start or didn't used to be able to start the season until they had their first pitch. I think best to say nothing there. I'm not seeing anything except Joey Votto that excites me. The Dodgers in the West is who I'm going to go with. The Diamondbacks could be challenging, that's for sure. And I thought the Rockies, I was amazed how close, looking back on it, that they were to being in the playoffs last year. The Giants have made some decent moves, and the Padres I'm going to put under the same category as the Braves, to kind of watch this team develop and add pieces. And I would like to see that market really become a baseball name again for a little bit. I've got the Nationals, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Cardinals I have being a wild card team, and the Rockies. And then my World Series would be the Astros. Tell me if you've heard this before. The Astros and the Dodgers. Although, Steve, they're not going to play Dodgers home games in the Coliseum like they did back in 59.
who do you have winning, Ken?
I've got the Astros winning again. Again, like I mentioned earlier, I am just so impressed with how that team was built. And if it took them 4 or 5 years to go through that misery, they got off light compared to us Browns fans. But, I like the Astros.
Well, Ken, I was talking before about rebuilds and how they can be compared to recessions, whether they be V-shaped or U-shaped. In the case of the Browns, it's basically the infinity straight line, I think the economists would refer to a recession like that. And we've been living this nightmare for well on to 20 years now. But I will say also, too, you know, in looking at the National League there, you know, an interesting picture that we all saw as far as, again, some of the teams in there. I want to mention the teams that you guys talked about. I do have St. Louis and Milwaukee as wild card teams, so I will have the wild card game being a rematch of the 1982 World Series and also, what was it, I believe the 2011 National League Championship Series, something only possible because of the Brewers changing leagues here. But as we bring this thing around and we look at the landscape for this season, and I will look forward to conversing with you guys subsequently as the season goes along, I cannot help but conclude in looking back on it here on our discussion that much like we were aiming for, Ken, just in the spirit of back in the day, the discussions that we would have all the time when Don and I had the privilege of sidekicking you on Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler back on the old Sports Talk Network back in the day. Much like Babe Ruth in the, 32 World Series, we called our shot. We pointed at the fence, and we did it. This one's for you, Don, and I think we really came through for him, Ken.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it just it warms my heart to have you two guys so knowledgeable about baseball and other subjects which we can get into at a later date. But at any rate, it was just a joy and a pleasure, and I'm sure he's listening in tonight and just smiling ear to ear, or probably dropping a couple expletives here and there when he disagreed with us. But thank you guys both so much.
No, I thought it was outstanding. The one thing that Don mentioned in our last conversation we had at your Halloween party that I found kind of inexplicable, he's the only guy I ever knew who really, 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 and not just because of one program, but loves regular season college basketball. He told me to, like, say he would sometimes he would stay up all night watching, like, West Coast games. I'm like, really? Regular season college basketball? So that was like...
Well, you got to remember, it might have been a different world at that time.
Yeah, might have been. But, I mean, it made me laugh when I heard that.
Oh, I know. I remember Wooden was out there on the West Coast. So
yeah, but I think he meant even present day. I think he was describing it that, like, because again, you know, being in ill health in recent years, and you know, probably I'm guessing probably sleeping at odd times, like that. It almost sounded like he didn't mind if he was like awake at night, because I'll just go watch some West Coast college hoops. I'm like, really?
Gotcha.
I would watch test patterns before watching a lot of that crap. I'm like most people.
Yeah, I think I would too.
I just care about March, just like 99% of the universe. But what a guy and what a character Don was. And again, much like I knew it would be, bringing you in, Steve, as the third man in the booth here, in true tribute fashion to Don, doing a three-man booth here, really, really worked out. And again, I knew you would bring it strong, and I always appreciate it, but there's that extra level of appreciation that this time that's even more heartfelt from Ken and I for you helping to honor our friend Don Koster. So I can't thank you enough.
Well, it's always great to do stuff with you two guys, but this is a special honor and a privilege for me to be the third guy in the booth, if you will. So I greatly appreciate the opportunity. As always, had a lot of fun, and hope this does some kind of justice to the memory of Don.
You guys, from my personal standpoint, for both of you gentlemen, as we're having a kumbaya moment here, I learned more ways of thinking about topics and teams, in this case today, listening to you, Steve, and you, Rick, giving different perspectives, and you just don't get that in sports radio much anymore. So thank you both again.
Well, thank you, Ken, and that's the thing, too, is that, again, in different ways, like I met you at the Sports Talk Network back in the day, doing shows there, and then that was when how Steve and I came to know one another early on with the FDH Lounge and Steve starting to appear on our show, and just what a hothouse of talent the place was. And we could sit here and we can laugh about various aspects of management or lack thereof over a period of time. But for me, it's the people who always defined the place. It was the people, it was the talent, and it was, again, the talent that had a lot of integrity as well, all the way top to bottom. I mean, that's what I think about when I think about that place. I don't think about any, you know, the downsides on the business end of it or anything like that or anything that I think is irrelevant. Front office to me is irrelevant when I think about that place. It's the talent. It's the people I met there, the friendships that I made, and a friendship with somebody like Don Koster that I will always treasure. I am glad that my friendship and association with you two guys is ongoing, and as far as it goes for Don, I will bring it around here on mini episode number 961 by saying once again, we love you, Don Koster. This show's for you. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IAmBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.